Greetings to each one of you again, this morning in the worthy name of Jesus. That last song we sang, Revive Us Again, I don't know if I ever sing it without it taking me back in my mind's eye to a little boy of probably one of my earlier memories, maybe 4 or 5 years old, to the Shirksville congregation. And there's a number of you here that have ties back to Shirksville congregation and were probably there, actually, that Sunday morning. One Sunday morning, we sang that song, and in my little boy's mind, I thought we were singing revivals again. And in my mind, I remember of thinking, is it truly revivals again? Are we going to have to sit through church every night this week? And that's just one of my early memories. I think it was Furl Good led the song, if my memory's right. It's a little bit foggy on that. Anyway, you young children here this morning, I know what you're going through. But we have just a couple more messages here, just one this morning and then one this evening if the Lord wills. Well, you may open your Bibles for a message to Psalm 127. Psalm 127. Let's just read Psalm at this time. It's 5 verses, just short. Psalm 127, verse 1, excuse me. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. The phrase or the concept that has run through my mind and developed into a sermon was verse 4, as arrows are in the hand of a mighty man. So are children of the youth. And the title of this morning's message is simply Arrows in the Hand of a Mighty Man. What is being said here? Why the comparison of arrows as in the hand of a mighty man? Well, it is certainly a positive analogy or figure of speech. Verse 5 goes on to say, happy is a man that hath his quiver full of them. Now, I'd like to back up just a little bit, just to start out. I believe this psalm is tied together. I don't think it's two distinct, different thoughts that except the Lord house build, that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. And except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It's vain to pursue things without the Lord. My Bible labels that. Don't even have it in this. But anyway, the vanity of doing things without the Lord. I believe that thought ties right in to this thought of children being a gift from God and how they are to be arrows in the hand of a mighty man. Are all families who have multiple children happy? Happy is a man that has his quiver full of them. Do children bring happiness? Some of you are shaking your head. Maybe you... Hopefully you're thinking of other families, not yours. I trust so. Are all families who have multiple children happy? Why or why not? Well, it's no secret. You've seen, as you looked around, you've seen families with multiple children that were devastating how they were. We've heard of some examples in Sunday school this morning. I so much appreciated Sunday school. I meant to mention that. In many ways, it built right into some of the things we're going to talk about this morning. Understanding that children are gifts from the Lord and that they belong ultimately to the Lord is foundational for this happiness, defining this happiness. Without that understanding, children become a hindrance to my selfish desires and tendencies. We are selfish by nature, and unless we remember that our children are gifts from, well, they're loaned to us from God, really. Don't need to tell you, young families here this morning, how it can tend to be friction because there's things we want to pursue and so on. These thoughts, and I've actually preached it's, I don't know if I can call it the same sermon or not, because I've been reviewing it this, but I preached a sermon not that long ago at our home church here in Smithdale. And so some of these things are carried over from them. Some of them are new. Some of them redone. But anyway, so the originally, the thoughts that have been running through my mind was because of a realization, and I can't point to any one thing, but a realization, maybe it was our oldest child's 18th birthday. That might have been what it was. But the realization that the time that I have to bear an influence on my children is not nearly as long as what I thought it was. Seems like when you receive that first child and you, what's in front of you immediately is taking care of their physical needs, and it doesn't take long to realize training really is going to have to be a part of this, and it looks like a long time till you have someone who's ready to leave your influence. But I've just been made aware of that wow, it's not as long as I thought. And archery hunters, and I know we're pulling this analogy out, he's talking about arrows in the hand of a mighty man, not as in going out and killing a deer, a white-tailed deer, or whatever you might think of in archery hunting this morning, but as a protection from the enemy. It's there's a future there, is the analogy. But this analogy of as arrows in the hand of a mighty man, and happy as a man that has his quiver full of them, arrows in a quiver is how I meant to say it. Arrows in a quiver are only potential energy. They don't keep the enemy at bay when they're in a quiver, do they? Okay, and so I'm not trying to say that children at home are useless. That's not at all what I'm trying to say. But the real potential there, the thing that we have to come to grips with is that one day they're released. And that's when the story is told, I guess, or when we maybe understand what all has been poured into them. And you archery hunters know the importance of using the short time you have in directing an arrow, and you also know the inevitable regret of releasing an arrow and it didn't go right. Right now, I know we're expanding this analogy a little bit, but it is important that we use the short time that we have. This morning, I want the focus of the message to be, how can I use? Let me give you the focus. We started on how can I use the short period I have to influence my children to a correct, balanced value system and God consciousness that will guide them through the rest of their life. Now, that was a mouthful. Let me read it to you again. How can I use this short time, the short period that I have, to influence my children to a correct, balanced value system and God consciousness that will guide them through the rest of their life? I am keenly aware, I have been becoming keenly aware in life, that my children will not be looking to me, at least some of them, will not be looking to me a whole lot longer on what is appropriate clothing to wear and what is the right type of pickup to drive and what is all those myriad of decisions that I've tried to help them make. And I realize it's not going to be a lot longer until they're making those decisions. So how can I use the short period of time that I have? And now that I know it's so short, what about my younger children coming on? It becomes more crucial. How is it possible to teach them not only what decisions to make, but of course the principle that guides those decisions? Because I have no idea what type of decisions they're going to need to make in life, what all the decisions they're going to have to make. And so it's important they understand the guiding principles that they come back to, and then they can make decisions from there. The fact is this morning that the rising generation will value something. They will value something. Once those of us that are raising families now, our old men have passed off the scene, there still will be some values, and that's a sobering thought. What will they be? So I said that was the focus of the message. I don't usually divide things out this dicey, but I want to give you the purpose of this message, of this mental journey that I want to go on this morning. And that is to you young parents here, I am blessed to see so many young families, and I count it a privilege to be able to preach to young families this morning that look like they are doing well at fearing God and raising families. But the purpose is to prompt awareness and forethought. Some of you have just young children, and maybe some of the things we've discussed this morning you may not have thought deeply about yet. Maybe you have, but you may not have. And to just bring an awareness. And some of these concepts have been clearly taught in our churches for years. The Bible teaches them clearly. And then others are things that I feel like I've gleaned along the way. And nothing's new under the sun. I know that. But maybe just stir your thinking. And hopefully you can, by bringing them out, discussing them this morning, you'll think about them more deeply. To the youth here, I hope that you will think ahead. God calls you to raise a family one day. Perhaps some of these things might come back as we continue to preach about them and discuss them. But also, besides that, I wanted to build an appreciation for the guidance that your parents have poured into your life and maybe understand a little bit of the struggle that went into it and the principles that they want you to get a hold of. And perhaps even as you understand the struggle and the tension of trying to instill values in children, youth, maybe you'll be moved. Maybe this morning you may be moved to forgive some errors on your parents' things that they've done. We talked about that the other evening. And to those of you that have already raised families, don't go to sleep. We need you here this morning. Perhaps you will recall some of those tensions and struggles of raising a family. Maybe you'll have corrections or advice or admonition. We need you here this morning. We need your input. I feel very timid about preaching this message this morning because I'm right in the thick of it. And hopefully you can accept this message from someone who is finding his way through it. But I've been encouraged several times in life, once by an older brother, a number of years ago when I preached a message, maybe in some ways similar to this, in some ways a lot different, but he thanked me for it. And he said, some of us older men, we can preach about raising children and so on, but he said we kind of forget where the battle lines are, and we're remembered about it when men that are raising children talk about it. And so I'm not trying to say I'm qualified to preach the message this morning, but I hope that you can bear with me as we go through these things, and I want to open myself up to your correction and to your admonition and advice that you might have later on. So let's look at a few basic principles, just a few basic principles before we get started with the practical admonition of how to instill values, godly values in our children. Let's go to 1 Samuel 2. I just lay down three basic elements that I want us to keep in mind. 1 Samuel 2, 22 through 29. Let's just read those verses. Take time to read them. So 1 Samuel 2, verse 22. Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto Israel and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he said unto them, why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear ye make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. And the child Samuel grew up and was in favor both with the Lord and also with men. And there came a man of God unto Eli and said unto him, thus saith the Lord, did I plainly appear unto the house of thy father when They were in Egypt, in Pharaoh's house. And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon mine altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel? Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation? And honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. And we'll just stop reading there. The point that I want to get the context and get to verse 29, that God holds parents responsible. They dare never honor their children above God's commandments. And we could probably develop a sermon on what that would look like. I'm just going to leave that for right now. But the obvious thought that we want to get from this is keep God first. God holds parents responsible to keep him first and not honor their children above him. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. Read those verses. Ephesians 6, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So while children are given specific commands, they're given something from God to obey their parents, God lays on parents a sobering responsibility here. He says, don't provoke them to wrath, but in opposition to that, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I believe what Paul was writing here is that these are two opposites. By simply not training and bringing up your children and teaching them, you'll have angry sons. You will turn them over to wrath. And then in Colossians, he talks about, you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, lest they be discouraged. And I believe the use of that word discouraged there is more they fall by the wayside. They give up. And so we have this sobering responsibility to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And yes, even though the first three verses of this chapter are addressed to children and we teach that to them, the how well they do about that, how well they learn those lessons, typically falls on parents' shoulders, right? So we have that responsibility to bring these verses to life for them, if I may say it that way. And then the last verse that I want to look at for just foundational principles here is Hebrews 13, 17. And this verse is typically used in the context of church leadership, and that's probably the application, but let's just talk about the principle a little bit. Hebrews 13, 17, obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give an account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. So this is sort of the verse is addressed to those who find themselves under authority. But there's this nugget in here that says that godly authority watches for your soul as one that understands he's going to give an account for what those placed under his authority value, if I may put it in my own words like that. And I don't know, like I said, we typically use this in relation to church leadership. At least that's the way I normally hear it expounded, which is probably so. And I don't know, what do you think those of you that are find yourself under the leadership here at Tyrone Congregation or whatever congregation you're a part of, what you think those verses mean to those that are called to be, to give account, to those who are, well, how does he say it here? To those that have the rule over you, I don't know what you think they feel when they read those verses. How do you think it makes them feel to realize that in some way they give an account, does that make them joyful or does that bring them grief? But now take that and think about where God has called responsibility to parents. And I don't know what this looks like. I don't have an understanding of this, whether there's really a literal session where leaders are called to give account for the ones God placed under their authority, or if we could talk a long time about that. But the principle, I believe, would definitely apply to godly parents, understanding that one day God does hold us responsible for those he placed under our authority, to the children he loaned to us, and we want to be able to give account of that with joy and not with grief. Now, some of the practical things we talk about here, we're going to try and balance these thoughts out just a little bit, but let's just hold that for now. I want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges and fears of the awareness rising within us that our children aren't going to be with us forever, and that what they value is going to be largely influenced by me as a father or by me as a mother. Probably the biggest reason for just naming these fears is, well, I hope you don't think I'm odd. I hope that you can connect with them and realize that these are common challenges for parents that are raising children, and just expose them a little bit. I find, at least for myself, it often finds to get these things out and at least talk about them briefly. Number one, a challenge that we face sometimes brings fear is that we see ourselves mirrored in our children. So when you're first raising a toddler, it's really cute when you start to see yourself mirrored in your child. When they go and try to put your work boots on and they can't about walk in them, you know, they do that because dad does that. Maybe girls try to do something in the kitchen. They use words that mom uses when she's baking or holding the baby or whatever, and it's really cute. But it doesn't take a whole lot longer till it starts to look a whole lot more serious than that. When we see our faults and our shortcomings coming out in our children, but even just seeing that they're imitating us can kind of cause us to stop and consider, and can kind of unnerve parents sometimes. The second challenge or fear is that when we see others' strong points or negatives in our children, and we start to realize that my wife and I are not the only one influencing our children. And those of you that have children that are at least 6 years old, or at least have gone to first grade, know the vulnerable feeling it is to take a child of only 6 years old and drop them off and leave them at school. And there's a number of things go through your mind, typically. One is, are people going to treat them well? What are they going to face? And how are they going to, people are going to see right into our home? What weaknesses are people going to see? And all of that, that's often part of it. But the other real fear is, what influences are they going to face? This is really, really young to be leaving a child at school. And then you kind of get used to that thought. And it's not that long until you send your child to youth functions and you see positives and negatives coming home, and you say, what influences are they facing? And then for us this year, just a couple months ago, it was to Bible school for the first time. And one of the things that I wondered about for 3 weeks is, what influences are being poured into my son at Bible school? And those things, for a large part, are out of our control. And that can really be unnerving when we see others, people's personalities and all displayed by our children, and you realize, oh, they're picking up things from other homes also. What all are they picking up? The third challenge in this is that we see our children's struggles and weaknesses. We see them struggling sometimes. And inevitably, when we look at our children, we see them struggling for victory, or we see them struggling with whatever it might be, anger or honesty or laziness or qualities that we don't want to see in our children. we see them struggling, and inevitably we get flashbacks, at least I do, to back when I was young, and think about the intense struggle that it was, still is, but what it was. And it's easy for parents to try to live in denial that my child's going to have to go through all of that and learn all the lessons that I did. Be nice to think that they don't, shouldn't have to. That can be really challenging. Sometimes it brings back unwanted memories from my past. And I think I've observed where that can actually paralyze parents and they live somewhat in denial. It can also motivate them. The fourth challenge that I have down here is that others make it look easy. You have anybody here at Tyrone that just, don't raise your hands or point, but that when you go to their house, you sure hope your children just sit at the table as nicely as theirs always do. Or you bring a young child to church and you just wish they would sit as still or as quietly as all the ones with so-and-so, right? And sometimes, from our perspective, other parents make it look easy and we wonder, what am I missing? Something's wrong. One of the places we went for supper this past week, the father in the home confided in me that he was kind of glad to see my young son jump up and leave the table, because that's something they're working on. It's not just happening in their home when you're trying to eat supper. And those are the things that sometimes we can feel like, this is just a battle that I'm facing. And I don't know that we should take, I didn't feel intimidated by that at all. But I'm just talking about seeing others finding their way through is helpful. But sometimes from our perspective, it looks like it is so much easier for others that I'm certainly missing something key here. And the last one that I have is that the exact opposite of that. Sometimes we see young people making extremely poor choices in spite of what we perceive as very strong parents. So we look around and we see other homes that look very strong to us, and yet some of their children have made really poor choices, and we say, if they couldn't raise children, how in the world am I going to do it? Okay? I don't want to dwell on these negative thoughts too long, but these are things, I'll just be honest with you, every last one of those is can be real in my life if I'm not careful to focus on those things. We need to move on beyond that. But those are some challenges of raising children, and you've probably thought of more. Fear never produces good results. It can spur you to find answers, and that's what we want to do this morning. But in itself, let's not deal on these issues. Let's just let it help us, let these things spur us to find the answers. What are some helps for using this short aiming period we have to the best of our abilities? Well, I have 7, which is probably too many, but let's try to move through them. I'll try to move through them in a timely manner. The first one, some of these are very basic and self-evident, like I mentioned before, but the first one is make godly values a part of everyday life. And we should throw teaching in there too. Make godly values and teaching those godly values a part of everyday life. I don't like my points to get too long, so I just wrote it, make godly values a part of everyday life. If you will let me read just a few verses here yet too, from Deuteronomy 11, you probably know where I'm going, but I want to read them to get them right. Of course, we're going to the Old Testament. Let me read them first, and then we'll talk about them a little bit. Therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. And ye shall teach them your children, speaking of them, when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house, and upon thy gate, then that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. I'm sorry. What I want us to get from that is way back when God gave the law in the Old Testament, the purpose of that was never something that they would just go study on the Sabbath and would be out there somewhere that you went out to learn. No, even back then, God's whole purpose was is that it would become part of their everyday life, that it would become internalized, if I may use that word. And God still expects godly values to be part of everyday life, to be real to us, to be part of our teaching, and to be part of the values that we display in everyday life. He never intended it to be just for, well, I already covered that, for certain times of the day or week, but he wanted it to be a guiding principle for every area of life. In a natural sense, thinking about this in a natural sense, I can try to instill in my children values that I wish that they would have. I could try to influence them to buy certain brands of vehicles or of tractors or tools. Over here, the application would be a little bit different, right? But I could try to influence them that these are going to last longer. You're going to get more for your money, right? But if I go buy the cheapest thing I can find, or the go to the pawn shop. You have pawn shops around here for my tools, and just pick up whatever and get my hands on. How well is that lesson going to actually live out in my children? Probably not so very well, right? And that's okay. They don't have to value the same brands of tools and all that I use. That's okay. But I'm trying to illustrate this that it's got to be internalized. They've actually got to see it mean something to you before it's going to mean a lot to them. I don't know that I've ever taught my boys. Let me back away from that. I don't know that I ever took time to consciously teach my boys that deer hunting is a rewarding and relaxing opportunity. I've never had to. And some of them have taken it up in ways that others haven't. Their personality is different. But they all kind of have this idea that even if they don't like to go sit out for a long time and be quiet, that deer hunting is still something that's worthwhile. And I try to keep that in moderation. But you see what I'm saying? I've never had to try to teach them that. But far more importantly than those things, while we try to consciously build an appreciation for the Bible and for biblical values, we do take time to consciously do this. Hopefully we have family devotions. Hopefully when the discussions arise like they do in families, we intentionally use those moments to point our children to God and to His values. So we do take time to intentionally do this. While we do that, the vehicle that carries those discussions and those teaching moments home is when our children see that actually lived out in our lives. And it makes sense. So, the second point I have, how to use this short time that we have to influence godly values in our children, is to be real or to be genuine. Another word that might fit in there is be transparent. All those three kind of under this point. To be real with yourself and with your children. Be genuine. Be transparent. This just builds on the last point, adds to it. As parents, I'd like to especially exhort young parents in this, that as parents, you do not need to pretend that you have all of life figured out. You don't even need to pretend in front of your children that you understand every biblical concept there is. They should see you struggling. They should see you honestly wanting to learn, but it's okay. It's okay for them. It's actually not just okay. It's crucial for them to see you grappling with, but how is this really going to look in everyday life today? Because that's how they learn to be real with their struggles and with their disillusionments and so on. And I know we always want to have an answer for our children. I don't want us to be careless with this. But I firmly believe that discussions of, I read this in my Bible this morning and I'm trying to figure out how that applies this week, or things like, because they pick up on this pretty easily, that we have this difficult customer that is going way on and beyond, demanding way over and beyond what is normal, and how am I going to relate to that? I know Jesus has a way that he would relate to a person like that. I wonder what it would be. And to be open about those difficult questions in our lives and finding our way through, I think it is tremendously beneficial for our children to see us working through those things and be real with them and not pretend that we just have all the answers inherently in ourselves. And like I already mentioned, that's how they learn to be real with God and real with you and learn that it's okay to struggle through things, to find answers. They learn by example. Another part of being real is consistency and transparency, probably more. There was a brother told me this story one time that happened in his home, and I never forgot it. He said they left the house, and they were going into town, and they got to the end of a road between their home and town. And there was road work right to the right. Like, they came to the T road, and right to the right was the way that would have been the shortest. It would have been the best way to go. But there was a sign right there that said road closed. There was road work. And he said the asphalt was done already. The lines were painted on the road. I think he said the lines were painted on the road. I think that's what he said. He said it only lacked a little bit. It would not have hurt to drive down that road, and they wouldn't have needed to go far at all to get to the road they wanted to go. And he took just a moment and decided, and he turned left. He turned away from that and went the long way into town. And his son asked him, he said, "Dad, why didn't you turn right?" He said, "You know it wouldn't have hurt to drive on that road. We wouldn't have had to go far. Why didn't you just turn right? You could have got by with it." And he told his son, he said, "Because there was a sign there that said road closed. And if I ignore it and drive past it, probably one day you children will have the idea that it's okay just to ignore not only road signs, but authorities, practical direction in your life. And so I went the other way." And he told me, he said he thought that was the end of the discussion. That was the end. They were driving down the road, and after a while, his daughter in the back seat said, "So, Dad, if we hadn't been along, then would have you turned right?" And he told me something. This is when our children were really, really little yet, too young to ask questions, or at least deep questions. And he said, "If you are hiding anything from your children, if you're not being real in front of them, those type of questions will drive you crazy. They won't. They will make you angry and frustrated. But when you're willing to be real in front of your children, there's a platform there that you and they both grow, because children have a way of refining you. You don't realize what all faults you have in life till they get old enough to start pointing them out. I can tell you stories about that too, but let's keep moving. Number three. This is a really, 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 the way I have it is really long. I'll give you a shortened version if you want. If you're writing it down, I have to understand what is crucial, what is necessary, what is important, what is beneficial, and what is minor. In other words, understanding a good value system, being able to place a value and be able to understand, like I said, okay, so what is crucial? What must, like what is absolutely paramount? What is crucial that my children understand and learn and value? And then what is really necessary? I don't know if I have these in quite the right order or not. What is important? I really want them to get that. What is beneficial? Okay, it would benefit them to have this. And then there's some minor things that I would really like them to value. Okay? We have to have a clear value system, because if not, what can easily happen is we as parents can burn ourselves out with what's in front of us on the minor things, and what's actually really crucial falls by the wayside. Does that make sense? So what is paramount? What is over everything else? Well, simply speaking, is to love God, right? That's what's paramount. And then you might have to decide where making your bed in the morning comes into all of this. It's probably a little above minor, maybe, but it's probably not crucial. I hope I don't get shot down for saying that, but you follow what I'm saying. Maybe I should have used a different example. It is good for them to learn responsibility. And part of this journey of understanding all of this and putting it into action comes in the form of when children start to ask deep questions. I say deep questions. When they start to ask questions that make us sweat. And we have to be able to differentiate these things. When children start to ask questions like, perhaps these type of things have happened in our homes. If you go to a funeral and all of a sudden your children are asking questions like, well, that lady couldn't have gone to heaven, right? She didn't wear a covering. Okay. How are you going to get a hold of that? Or that man could not be a Christian because he's a policeman, right? Now, you want to be careful how you answer those questions, because you can just wash them away and say, oh yeah, God can work in anyone's life, and you just communicated something that you might not have wanted to communicate to your children. On the other hand, if you're not careful, they may grow up with the prejudice that if they don't belong to Tyrone Mennonite congregation, they're probably not part of the kingdom of God, and that's not really where you want your children to be either, right? And so you're walking a tightrope here answering these questions and confronting their what you hear them saying. I remember one of our young boys asked me a question years ago, and he was young, and I broke it down. I thought through it a little bit, and I broke it down into as clear and simple as possible as I could for him. And then when I got done explaining it, I said, so does that make sense? And he looked at me, and without any shame or whatever whatsoever, said, no, not really. But, you know, it was the end of it. He was okay with it. And I believe that when your children see you working through with it and they can grasp that there is an honest answer and an explanation for this, young children will be okay with that, okay? Even if, no, that didn't really make sense. So there's a balance there. So under this point of value systems, I believe I've observed two distinct imbalances on this point. One is to be too broad in our value system, in our discussions, and perhaps inadvertently portray to our children that all that matters is that you love God, and whatever that looks like, God is happy with. You follow what I'm saying? That's all that matters. On the other hand, well, we have what we already talked about, that the kingdom of heaven is very narrow. And how do we bring that all together? Well, we'll never be able to cover this point this morning, so I'm just about to move on. But one of the things that I believe is extremely important as we try to teach our children is that as we teach them that God can work in anyone's life. And we're not here to judge where they are on their journey in life, right? Perhaps that policeman, God could be working in his life. Perhaps that woman that passed away and didn't dress like we believe the Bible teaches, and you fill in the blanks. I mean, there's hundreds of opportunities for this. We need to teach them that God can work in anyone's life, and we don't judge their standing before Him. But when people are serious about serving God, what the Bible describes a Christian to be, that is what people will be becoming. And that allows our children to grapple, as they grow up, allows them to grapple with things of people that are quite different, and especially when you get into other cultures and all, and they can grapple with that and say, but, so God can be working those people's life, but they will be led, they will be becoming disciples of Jesus Christ in practical everyday ways. I know that doesn't answer all the questions, but I believe it's crucial that they grab hold of that concept. I believe that allows God to be bigger than our church group without opening the door to too much confusion. And so, as you teach that, we have to get off this point, but as you teach that, then you can also teach that while God can work in anyone's life, why would we trade the practical obedience that we have, what we believe the Bible teaches? Why would we trade that even if that man might be a Christian? Or no, we should be moving this direction, not to less practical obedience. Okay, let's keep moving. The fourth one is be consistent and trust God's direction. That's kind of two thoughts together, but the trust is what I want to capitalize on here. Trust God that consistency will pay off, might be another way to say this. Be consistent and trust God's direction, even when you don't see immediate results. Sometimes it just doesn't look like consistent teaching and discipline is paying off. Young children, sometimes it looks this way. One of our children, we worked on an issue and we spanked and we spanked and we spanked on it. And I remember why my wife and I looking at each other and saying, is there something we are missing? We're not getting anywhere. It hasn't gotten any better. And one day, I don't know how much later it was, came to the realization, I don't know when we last dealt with that. Now, there was continued direction needed. Don't get me wrong, but for that specific issue. But when you're in the heat of those things, it can really, really look discouraging. And spanking's not always, well, obviously they outgrow that. When you're raising youth, that's not even an option anymore, right? But be consistent and don't get discouraged when it doesn't look like your consistency is paying off. And there's a time to open up and ask for advice for people that have been down this road before. Absolutely. But don't just jump from one trial to the next and say, well, that's not working. Let's try something else here quick and get frantic about it. I think this point probably applies in a special way over here on this side. I believe as a blanket statement, as a general rule, fathers will often be, maybe almost to a fault, will be able to see that a child sometimes just, or a youth, just needs to develop and grow up. And we just need to consistently keep bringing these values in front of him, keep training, and let's not get discouraged about where we are. Tends to be more this side, and maybe sometimes it's laziness. Over here, mothers often struggle with fear when they're not grabbing hold of a situation as quickly. That's a blanket statement. So I just want to encourage you, especially over here in that, don't get too jumpy and too flighty. Relax, pray about it, of course. Talk to your husband about it and learn to trust that consistency and that God's ways will pay off. And also, let me quickly mention here before we move on to the next point, don't get so hung up on what you're working through that you forget to focus on all the victories that God has given, okay? There's often a lot of, you look at where consistency has paid off, but we often focus on the negatives. Don't get that hung up on what you're going through that you forget what all you have to be thankful for. All right, number five is develop and maintain meaningful, age-appropriate relationships. So this one's really a challenge when your family spans from 2 to 20, right? To maintain age-appropriate relationships. Your relation with your child will change as he ages. And you age too, right? Some fathers find it easier to connect on the floor playing blocks with a 2-year-old than they do with an 18-year-old in some respects, right? And others are exactly opposite of that. And when you do have, as your children grow, and some of you know a whole lot more about this than I do, I'm aware of that, but as your children grow and that relationship changes, don't forget about the ones that are still back there playing with tractors and blocks on the floor either, okay? Try to be, I don't know if all things to all men is the right phrase here or not, but make sure that you're sensing whether they're, the way you're communicating with them, the way you're relating with them, is being heard and felt. But, so don't expect, even your young person, remember your youth, remember how you felt when you were 15, 16, 17. When they mature in body, I don't know how you are, but I start to look at them as adults and just expect them to act just like adults. And somewhere there's this fine line between remembering the challenges of transitioning from childhood to adulthood, that period called youth, and I'm using that in a broad sense. This can be from, 12, 13, 14. So there can be a fine line between just letting them be immature or expecting them to be grown up. But as we give them time and as we encourage them on, let's always be calling them to more and more maturity. Okay, but let's be careful that we don't just just start relating to them to adults as adults and lose them, if that makes any sense. Also be very, very careful about being dragged into meaningless power struggles. This is probably a side note, might should be a point in itself. Some children from the age of very young have learned how to argue and how to manipulate and how to give their reasons until all that's left is dad arguing with six-year-old Johnny or whatever it is, if you're not really careful. And as you get up into older children, it doesn't always change. And there's a time even for youth. We're taught often that we need to have answers for our children and for our youth, and I heartily agree with that. But there's also a time to respectfully say, I know you feel that way, but after all, God has called me to be the father, and this is the way. We're just not going to open this up for discussion anymore. Because when you find yourself being drawn into this meaningless power struggle, I'll just leave it at in my experience, good has never come out of that. Number six, remember all souls have a choice, especially as you deal with older children. And again, I feel inferior on this point because so many of you have so much more experience, but this is the hardest point of the message by far. But it's crucial, I believe, that we remember that because God loves your children so much, he allows them to choose. And don't become bitter at God when a child chooses something that is less than the best for him. It's not God who's failed, and it's not even necessarily you that's failed. Every child has a choice, and try to remember that it's because God loves them so much, he gives them a choice. Don't give up in defeat and despair. There have been too many parents in my short years of observing who have started down the road of making excuses for their children, for starting to openly... I'll just leave that example. And maybe even following after their children when they choose to make unwise choices. In my short years of observation, it has always worked out best when the parents stayed firm, kept praying, and stayed right where they are. The child knows where to come back to. An older deacon brother was telling me, dealing with a really difficult situation, he said, if only people would remember that the prodigal son's father was at home when the prodigal son came back. I know that typifies God, but they need to know where you stand and where to find you. And even when it looks hopeless, keep praying and hanging on and stay there. Stay faithful. God loves your children enough to give them a choice, which means that when children do make wise choices and God uses them in mighty ways, the glory still goes to God. Number seven, this is the last point. Focus on God's faithfulness. There are lots of fearful things to focus on. The world is an evil place. Children can get into all kinds of evil, and we need to be aware of that. We need to guard them. And we also tend to think about what will our children face? What will our grandchildren face? We have the challenges of AI that's right upon us. There's lots and lots and lots of questions about what our children and grandchildren might face, and you can become almost paralyzed by that, or paralyzed by that, not just almost. And perhaps it's okay to think about those things from time to time. I'm not saying we shouldn't look at them objectively, but we must always, those thought patterns should always lead us back to God's faithfulness. Remember with God's covenant with the Israelites, how he longed to have a relationship with them, and the only thing standing in the way was them themselves. God's faithfulness will be here for my generation, for the next generation, for however many generations to come, there will always be a way. We don't need to live in fear that there won't be a way. Remember God's faithfulness to me personally, that even when I went through difficult things in life, as a parent I'm talking about, remember God's faithfulness to me personally. I went through difficult things in life. God was always there for me. There's always a way. Well, in conclusion this morning, may God help each of us, whatever stage you find yourself in here this morning, wherever we are, to choose faith over fear, to be real with ourselves, be real with God, be real with our children, to love God wholeheartedly and inspire the oncoming generation to do the same. Let's kneel for a word.